Several of the things he said will be very useful for what I will say. My title is Anti-De-Sitter Deep Brains. I should have added Anti-De-Sitter to Deep Brains in ADS3, but this would have chased many people in the audience away. So I hided the dimensions. But as you will see, there are some very interesting things to say about these deep brains. This is work done in collaboration with Marios Petropoulos, and it is also based on some earlier work of last year with Mike Douglas and Christoph Schweiger. Now, let me very briefly give you some reasons. They are obvious, but let me repeat them quickly for why this problem of deep brains in the SL2R group manifold Vesumino-Witten model is interesting. Well, the one obvious reason is that deep brains have opened a window and have given glimpses of the microscopic structure of space-time. And in doing so, it was very important that we had an exact conformal field theory description of the deep brains, including at very short distances. But they are still very poorly understood in curved geometries. And the hope, part of the hope of this work was to get some better understanding of how deep brains fare in curved geometries. A second equally important motivation for us was that the experience with the SU2 Vesumino-Witten brains was that one could get very cheaply exact conformal field theory data information out of rather simple, almost trivial, semi-classical calculations. I will say a few words about that. And therefore, the same hope exists here, get some exact data about this SL2R Vesumino-Witten model, which is a very important conformal field theory. It is related to Liouville, and you have heard about recent progress in understanding this theory, but this is probably one of the oldest standing problems in string theory, understanding correctly the quantum Liouville theory, which appears in particular in non-critical strings and in the near horizon region of black holes. Finally, I was personally also interested in getting some insights into warped compactifications and into cosmology in brain worlds, and I will make a couple of comments about that in the very end. Now, let me very briefly review, since Volcker has already talked about that, review what happens in the compact case simply to set notation. I will only take a couple of transparencies for that. As he explained, the symmetric boundary conditions correspond to gluing the Vesumino-Witten currents, the left and the right ones, by some group automorphism. So you impose these boundary conditions. And the nice thing about them is that because the Virasoro generators are simply quadratic in the currents, you are automatically preserving a diagonal conformal symmetry. So you are exactly solving the classical string equations of motion without much work. Now, these classical string equations are, of course, the Dirac-Born-Neufeld equations for the appropriate brain plus an infinite set of corrections in principle, but you are solving these things exactly. Now, having glued the currents like that does not fix uniquely the type of deep brain you are talking about. There is, first of all, a moduli space for these deep brains, which is the group manifold itself, for instance, SU2 in this simple case, and that's simply because you can translate, group translate the brains around the manifold. There is furthermore this discrete degeneracy, and in conformal field theory, this corresponds to the fact that you have k plus one distinct boundary states. Those could be either the character or Ishibashi states, which have a well-defined coupling to a single closed string in a single representation of the Kac-Moody, or a discrete Fourier transform of them. The discrete Fourier transform is given by the modular transformation matrix, SJK, and this takes you to Cardy states. The Cardy states have the nice property of having integer open string multiplicities and are therefore the things that one could identify with semi-classical brains. Now, since we know everything essentially about this conformal field theory, in particular we know the modular transformation matrix, with standard manipulations, in particular the cylinder diagram, we can compute essentially most of the properties of these deep brains. You can extract easily the mass. The mass is proportional to the SI zeroth component of this matrix because you want to couple to the zeroth representation, which is the graviton in the closed channel. And remember, the Cardy state had such a coupling to the corresponding Ishibashi state. So the mass is sine of 2j plus 1 pi over k plus 2. The Ramon-Ramon charge couples to the spin a half, if you calculate it correctly, closed string state. And this gives you directly the formula here. The spectrum of open strings on these deep brains are, again, very simple to calculate. They have masses given by the conformal weights, SS plus 1 over K plus 2. And there's one subtle thing about them. The spins are integer, and they are cut off not by K, K being the level of the Kac-Moody algebra, but by J, where J is the quantum number that characterizes the deep brain. So J goes from 0 to K plus 1, from 1, I'm sorry, 2J plus 1 goes from 1 up to K plus 1. This characterizes the deep brains, and there is a cutoff on the allowed angular momenta given by J. In fact, there is a decoupling limit. K goes to infinity with J held fixed, and as Volcker explained, in this decoupling limit, one gets non-commutative field theory on the fuzzy sphere. Now, all this is conformal field theory. The geometric interpretation started being revealed by a very nice paper by Alexeyev and Somerus, in which they described how these boundary conditions correspond geometrically to conjugacy classes on the group manifold. And the question that started us thinking about this problem was a very naive one. Well, we wanted to really understand in different terms why these brains are stable, despite the fact that pi 2 of S3 is, of course, trivial. So they could a priori shrink to zero size. Now, the obvious answer to that is to say, well, there is a quantized magnetic flux on this brain. F integrated gives 2 pi n. This is not a priori sufficient by itself because of strong field or relativistic effects. To explain what I mean, if you think about a spherical brain in flat space-time, and you write down the Dirac-Bohr-Neufeld action, it really takes this form, area squared plus n squared. So the minimum is not at a finite area, as if I had simply tension plus Maxwell energy. It is really at area equals to zero. The deep brain likes to disappear into n defects, which are n deep particles. And of course, that's why we don't have stable brains, spherical brains, in flat space-time. So the reason why these are stabilized is more complicated. It is really due to the interaction of this flux with the background B field. There's presumably a T-dual description of this as a dielectric blow-up of N-D particle bound state, as explained in similar context by Myers. Let me here stick with this original description of a spherical two-brain with a magnetic field on it. One of the surprises when you try to push this a bit further is that the very simple semi-classical analysis based on the Dirac-Bohr-Neufeld action gives exact results for the conformal field theory with really very little work. So it's a very simple access to some CFT data, presumably due to some hidden supersymmetry that I will describe in a minute later. Here's how this works. Well, you just write down the metric, the B field, and then you turn on n units of flux on the deep brain. Those are straightforward. I'm writing them down here in polar coordinates for the S3. And you then calculate the Dirac-Bohr-Neufeld energy. And you minimize that. So it's very easy to see that there is a unique minimum at a polar angle given by this expression, where n is the number of units of magnetic flux, and L is the radius of the background. And there is one brain for each n between 0 and L squared over alpha prime. You can calculate the mass directly from this energy by going to the minimum. You find this formula. You can calculate a Ramon-Ramon charge in quotation marks, which is really the gauge invariant B plus 2 pi alpha prime F coupling of this brain. It's a local coupling, really. And you get this formula here. And you can also calculate the spectrum of small fluctuations. This takes a little bit more work, but again, it's straightforward. And you do find SS plus 1 over L squared, the basic eigenvalues of the covariant operator on a two-sphere in the appropriate representations. In particular, you get the triplet of zero modes as expected for translating this on the sphere. Now, all these results are in exact agreement with CFT if you just set L squared equal to k plus 2 alpha prime, and n equals to 2j plus 1. Let me make two comments before moving on to the non-compact case. There's one thing which is very subtle and which you don't see in the semi-classical analysis, and this is the cutoff on the spins, s less than or equal to j. Now, this is not visible in the semi-classical Dirac-Born-Neufeld action. It is visible with a naive argument in the following sense. There is a decoupling limit in which L goes to infinity, or L squared over alpha prime really goes to infinity with n fixed. You can calculate the B field, or B plus 2 pi alpha prime F in this limit. It behaves like sine of 2 pi n alpha prime over L squared. The induced metric behaves like sine squared. The two spheres shrinks to zero. And therefore, you are in a limit in which this is much bigger than g hat. You are thinking about dipoles in a strong magnetic field, and those should only have n squared states. However, this is not really visible in the DBI action, and it is a subtle, and I don't know how to do it, actually, question of how you could do a Zyber-Quitten type of map to understand this from the U1 theory in the B field. A second comment has to do with the stringy exclusion principle. There are the number of D particles that can exist on these two spheres is bounded, as we saw, between 0 and k plus 2. You cannot put, in a sense, an n bigger than k plus 2, a flux bigger than k plus 2. This can be seen in some particular context. It is usually called the stringy exclusion principle. In some other contexts, it is really related through dualities to the usual Pauli exclusion principle. And one way to understand this is by looking at this SU2-Vesumino-Witten theory as the near horizon region of k plus 2 Neves-Schwarz 5 brains. Now, this near horizon geometry has an SU2 level k, bosonic level k, a Feigen-Fuchs or linear dilaton field, and spectator, six spectator flat coordinates. And you can now look at deep brains that have Neumann boundary conditions along the radial Feigen-Fuchs direction. Those would be n D1 strings moving into the Neves-Schwarz 5 brains, and they can be joined asymptotically, for instance, to some transverse D3 brain. And we know by a simple S-duality that this is one of these 0-8 systems in which the ground states of the stretched strings are fermions. You can only put a number n total of them, and that explains, in this context at least, why n cannot be bigger than k plus 2 in a supersymmetric ground state. Let me move on now quickly to SL2R and try to reason in the same way for SL2R. SL2R can be parameterized in this way, which makes obvious that you are talking about ADS3, the hyperboloid, which has to be universally covered. And you can now try to think about conjugacy classes, which are the obvious deep brains in this group manifold. In fact, one of the early papers on this was by Sonia Stanciu, who looked at regular conjugacy classes. This correspond to taking the trace of G equals to a constant, so X0 equals to a constant, and depending on whether this constant is less or bigger than 1, you get two types of geometries, either hyperbolic planes or De Sitter, two-dimensional De Sitter geometries. Now, and she analyzed also the supersymmetry properties of those. Now, there is a third type of brains, and I will concentrate on those, which correspond to these twined conjugacy classes, and which use the outer automorphism of SL2R that is given here, 0, 1, 1, 0. The determinant is minus 1, so this is not an element of SL2R. These symmetric brains correspond to fixing X2 to a constant as opposed to X0, and you can easily see that we are now talking about an ADS2 geometry. In fact, as I will show in the next transparency, these brains are the only physically allowed motions, deep brain motions, in this geometry. The reason why the DS2 brains are not physical is immediately visible if you just draw them in cylindrical coordinates. So here is the cylindrical coordinate parameterization of SL2R. You see that X0 equals to constant corresponds now to taking cos rho, rho being the radial coordinate and cylindrical coordinates, time cosine of the time equals to a constant bigger than one. Now, if you draw this trajectory, this is a circular D-string moving in and out in this geometry, you can see that it hits the boundary of ADS in a finite time, tau equals to pi. If it reaches the boundary of ADS in a finite time, it could only be possibly a long string. However, there are no long 1, Q strings in this geometry because the tension is always bigger than the Nevesh-Schwarz charge, and therefore this is not energetically allowed. In fact, you can make this somewhat more precise, actually exactly precise, by just writing down the form of the energy. So after a little work, you see that the energy has two terms. It has a blue shifted mass plus kinetic energy, and it has the coupling to the background B field. The mass is given by the tension of a 1, Q string generically, because you can turn on some electric field on this D string, times the length at position rho of this circular string. And you can see that when rho goes to infinity, the blue shifted mass always dominates over this term. So this motion is energetically forbidden. The physical motions, you can easily compute them, correspond to oscillating strings like that. They are examples of non-symmetric Vesumino-Witten brains in this non-compact manifold that would be interesting to examine further. What about DS2? Well, it is a solution, of course, since we have just satisfied the Virasoro conditions. It happens to be a solution with supercritical electric field and hence an imaginary action. And I'm not sure how this should be interpreted, but it is an interesting question of how these solutions could be interpreted. Let me now go to the ADS2 brains and first of all draw them also, which is simple to do. In cylindrical coordinates, x2 equals to constant corresponds to a stretched D-string that stretches between two antipodal points on the boundary of ADS3. Actually, it's not a D-string, it's generically a 1, Q string because, again, there is some F-field, electric field on the world volume, and this gives rise to a number of bound fundamental strings. Before making, again, this more precise, let me draw the same trajectory in Poincaré coordinates because I will need it in a moment. In Poincaré coordinates, U, X, and T, this takes a very simple form. U, which is the radial coordinate, is equal to a constant over X. X is the spatial coordinate along the Poincaré slice. So these are brains that come in from infinity, and then according to whether C is bigger or less than zero, move along the Poincaré horizon without ever touching it. Now, you can check very easily that those are indeed solutions of the equations of motion. Here is the metric in Poincaré coordinates for ADS3. Here is the B field. DB is the volume form times 2. And you have two simple equations. One is the integrated Gauss constraint, which tells you that the number of fundamental strings bound to the D string is integer. And the second is, for instance, the conservation of the world volume energy momentum tensor, which takes this form. So you just have to solve these two equations. Now, if you demand free boundary conditions in the x direction, there should be no flow of x momentum at infinity. You should put theta xx to zero, and this gives you uniquely this ADS2 brains. There are other solutions which correspond to strings that move in and then back out again, but this corresponds to some Dirichlet conditions in the transverse directions. If you didn't impose Dirichlet conditions, the string would move in and annihilate. Now, these are the ADS2 strings. Let me now move on to the third and last part of what I want to say. Let me talk about supersymmetry, open-closed metrics, and some speculation about these brains. First, I want to explain to you that this can be part of supersymmetric and hence stable brains. And the simplest context in which to analyze those is the near horizon geometry of NS5 brains and fundamental strings. This is sometimes called the Strominger-Wafer-Black string. Now, the near horizon geometry of this has an SL2R Vesumino-Witten model. This is the ADS3 part of the geometry. It has an SU2 Vesumino-Witten model. This is the S3 surrounding the black string. And it has four spectator dimensions, which are, for instance, a four torus on which I wrap the Nevesh-Schwarz 5 brains, or actually four of the five directions of the Nevesh-Schwarz 5 brains. So the setup is here. I have the black string. It has some fundamental strings here, some wrapped Nevesh-Schwarz 5 brains. And X, U, and T form the ADS3 geometry. And the three sphere around this thing forms the SU2 geometry. Now, this geometry has obviously ADS2 times S2, D3 brains. And that's rather obvious directly, either by tensoring the boundary states of the corresponding conformal field theories, or by using factorization of the Dirac-Bornifeld action. There is one subtlety that has to do with the quantization condition of the Gauss constraint, and this is simply modified by a multiplicative factor. You can now talk about n D-strings as opposed to a single D-string, and if you have n here, you get that the constant that I calculated before is q over n times tf over td. Now, here is how these things look like. So they are ADS2 times S2 brains that move in from infinity and then go along the horizon of the Poincaré coordinates. They carry the quantum numbers of an n, q string as seen by integrating over an S2f and the dual of dl df. This is the electric and the dual magnetic field on this geometry. Are those supersymmetric? It is very simple to see that in some instances they are. Let me explain the argument quickly. To talk about supersymmetry, let me start by considering, first of all, the fermionic partners in this Vesumino-Witten model, which are 10 free fermions with an index in the flat tangent index alpha, A. Their zero modes are gamma matrices, and the closed string background preserves one-half supersymmetry. That's well known. One way to see that, actually, is by just considering the super-Virasoro constraint on closed string Ramon-Ramon states. Now, because the supercurrent has trilinear pieces in the fermions, this corresponds to a chiral projection on the allowed supercharges, Q and Q bar, of this form, the product of all gamma matrices in SU2 and SL2R has to be equal to 1. So that's one of the earliest studied, actually, exact supersymmetric backgrounds in string theory. Now, what happens if I insert my D brain in this background? Well, the automorphism omega induces some automorphism in spinor space, and it is simple to see that 1/4 of the original supersymmetries, namely those of the form Q plus omega Q bar, are surviving in this setup. Do these survive in the asymptotically flat region? That's less obvious, and let me skip this discussion. I think they do very much in the same way that supersymmetric string junctions can preserve supersymmetry. Let me skip that since I'm running out of time. This can also survive, supersymmetry survive in more general backgrounds in which you are modding out this ADS3 times S3 geometry by some orbifold, discrete orbifold group gamma. Now, again, this would take some discussion. I will skip it. It turns out that only in space times that correspond to supersymmetric conical singularities, you can have supersymmetric D brains of this form. In the original five-dimensional black hole, these D brains always break supersymmetry. Well, let me skip this argument. So in the last 2 minutes, I can explain it to whoever is interested. But let me talk about how these things are viewed from the world volume of the brain and make a comment or two. Suppose I want to understand how supersymmetry is realized from the world volume of this D3 brain, which has ADS2 times S2 geometry. Well, the obvious thing to do, first of all, is to try to calculate the radii of S2 and ADS2. If you calculate the radius of the two sphere, this is a simple formula. The radius is always smaller than the radius of the background, L, remember these two spheres didn't trap necessarily the equator. They could be arbitrarily small. They could shrink to a point in the North Pole. So there is some formula which tells you that the radius of the sphere is less than the radius of the background. Likewise, the radius of the anti-de Sitter brain is always bigger than the radius of the background, again, as you can see easily from the formulae that I wrote down. In particular, the ADS2 slice can be made arbitrarily flat, independently of the radius of the ADS3 embedding space. So there seems to be a puzzle here, because world volume supersymmetry requires that these two radii be, of course, equal. Well, the resolution of the puzzle is obvious. The relevant radii are not the induced closed string radii. They are the effective open string metric radii. And you can calculate those very easily by using the standard formula that is written here, because the B field or the F field on these brains is covariantly constant. There is no H field. So you can just apply this formula. If you do that, you find, of course, what you expect, namely that the effective open string radii of this D brain, ADS2 times S2, go back to the value L, which is the value of the radius of the background. So the effective open string metric has radii frozen to the radius of the bulk geometry, even though in the induced metric you think that you can flatten out ADS2 and you can shrink S2 almost to a point. This is, of course, consistent and required by supersymmetry. It is also kind of obvious from the CFT point of view, because I have one more transparency, because the spectrum of open vertex operators is essentially having the same conformal weights as closed vertex operators. And this seems to be like a general argument which could lead to a more general property of brains in curved backgrounds. I don't have more to say about that, but it's certainly worth thinking about. Now, that's my last transparency. Sorry for rushing through. Summary and open problems. I have shown you that there is an interesting new class of possibly supersymmetric, if you wish, D brains with ADS2 geometry. The world volume theory of these brains, about which I didn't have time to talk much, is a curved space version of the non-commutative open string theory. There is a limit in which the field goes to its critical value. So it is very analogous to the non-commutative Young-Mills on the fuzzy sphere, but for a non-compact case. The brains cannot be flattened out in the effective metric. And there could be a more general validity to this property, actually. And the interesting open questions are to extract information on the SL2R conformal field theory, in particular the Cardy states and the S matrix, which should be accessible from the simple semi-classical calculations, and also something I haven't thought about at all, holographic interpretation of these brains. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? So if there are no questions, let us thank Professor Kostas Pokas again.